Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
HD3, Philadelphia. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast. This is the next generation of talk. Now, this is the drive at 5. 30 minutes of non-stop talk with Rich Zeoli.
Yes, it is, and we are waiting for the Supreme Court. Will they weigh in on future President Donald Trump's sentencing out of New York? What is going on here with all this? We'll talk about it this hour. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. It's 30 minutes of nonstop talk brought to you by our friends at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Whenever there's these complicated legal issues, there's only one guy I want to turn to, and we're very, very lucky to have him. And that is the one and only Andrew C. McCarthy, senior fellow at National Review, former assistant United States attorney for the Southern District of New York, author of the book Ball of Collusion, the plot to rig an election and destroy a presidency. And he joins me now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Andy, how you doing, my friend?
Rich, I'm doing great. How are you? Happy New Year.
Good. I appreciate your time today. And again, follow Andy on X at Andrew C. McCarthy. Your latest piece over at National Review on the subject. So give us the overview of what Judge Mershon wants to do here in New York City, Andy.
Well, bottom line, Rich, is the rhetoric of the campaign notwithstanding. And what I mean by that is Trump was repeatedly called a convicted felon. But in Democratic campaign messaging following the jury verdict in the preposterous Alvin Bragg case in Manhattan, he actually isn't a convicted felon. In the criminal law, this is kind of lawyer persnickety, but I think it's important. It's certainly important to Trump. In the criminal law, the judgment of conviction in a criminal case does not get entered until the defendant is sentenced. And that generally happens 3 months or so after the jury verdict, because in the interim, you have all the stuff that goes on in every case, like, you know, motions to throw out the case because of X, Y, or Z error. Here, you had a very unusual, I don't know that I've ever seen this before, a month after the jury verdict, the Supreme Court announced its immunity ruling, and that ended up having a direct impact on the case. Mainly because of Bragg and Mershon. Bragg offered and the judge let into evidence proof of Trump's acts, his official acts as president. They really shouldn't have done that because the case was essentially about his private behavior. But because they put in that evidence, that's exactly the kind of stuff the Supreme Court said that you're not allowed to do in the immunity ruling. So Trump beefed up his motions to dismiss or to vacate the jury verdict. And here, the legal complication is that most errors that occur in trials, like say they let in evidence that shouldn't have come in, or they let in a confession that shouldn't have come in, or you know, the prosecutor did something sleazy. Most of that stuff, you have to wait until the end of the case, after the guy gets convicted, after he gets sentenced, and then the whole case goes up on appeal together as one, and you can make whatever claims of error you want to make on appeal. Immunity is different. The only other thing I can think of that's like it is double jeopardy. The thing with immunity is the error is not wrongly convicting someone. It's putting a person who has immunity through the criminal process in the first place. And what that ends up meaning is you're supposed to be able to immediately appeal an immunity ruling. Mm-hmm. And you're allowed to litigate it up until and including however long it takes you to appeal. And what that means is the jurisdiction over the case should be taken away from the trial judge. So what Trump is, in a nutshell, this is very long-winded, and I'm sorry about that. But
No. It's good, Trump actually.
Is saying here is Merchon, the judge, denied his post-trial immunity motions. He said that the case doesn't have to be thrown out on account of the immunity claims. So what Trump is saying is you can't sentence me because I'm immediately appealing the immunity ruling, and that should deprive you of jurisdiction to do anything. And so far, Merchon is fighting him on that. And what Trump is trying to get the New York courts and the Supreme Court to do is say, no, you can't sentence him on Friday. He's got a right to litigate his immunity claims on appeal before you can do anything.
It seems so incredibly political, Andy. You know, I'm obviously not a lawyer, and we're grateful for your legal expertise on this because you really are. You make it easy for us to understand. But it seems to me, as a political guy, this is purely political so that they can say Trump is a convicted felon and make him the first president of the United States to be a convicted felon. It's almost like fulfilling the campaign promise.
Yeah, well, let me tell you why you're right about that, and then you can impress all your friends when you make this argument.
Listen, it doesn't take much for me to impress my friends, okay? Let's be honest. Come on, Andy.
Well, I'm impressed, Rich, if no one else is. But all along, we all know that Bragg's case is ridiculous, right? It was basically at most a misdemeanor that he tried to carve into and did carve into 34 felony counts. As a misdemeanor, it should have been time barred because there's a 2-year statute of limitations. You know, we've been through all this before. But to make it a felony, what they said was Trump falsified his business records in order to commit a second crime. And basically the crime that Bragg claimed to the jury that Trump committed, and Merchon let him do this, was that Trump stole the 2016 election. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy. Now, I won't go through the 18 zillion reasons why that's crazy. My point here is, in order to try to get Trump to agree to be sentenced on Friday, what Merchon said last week is he's thought about it and he's decided to sentence him to what's called an unconditional discharge in New York law. And what that means is it would be a sentence of no jail, no probation, no fine, no monitoring, no anything. And what that can only mean is all they want this for is to get this guy branded a convicted felon on the public record in a formal way. But my point is, if you really believed that Trump stole the most important office in the world, the most consequential office in the executive branch and the United States government, how could that conceivably be a no jail crime?
Right.
How could it conceivably be no probation, no anything? So these people don't even believe anything that they're saying, because if they really thought that's what Trump did, a no jail sentence would be inconceivable. And I think what that shows is all they want here is to basically put the scarlet letter on him. They want to make him a convicted felon before he goes into office. And what they keep saying is that there's an important public interest in that, in finality here. And it seems to me that the election kind of shows there's not any public interest in that. What there is interest in is progressive Democrats in New York want to brand Trump a convicted felon. Now, I don't think the country's there.
No, because he won. And I mean, if Democrats were smart, they would drop this nonsense and realize it didn't work for them. If anything, people's perception that he was a convicted felon, even though he wasn't convicted, even though there wasn't a sentencing, it helped. It helped Trump. It helped Trump with a lot of different people. I mean, to hear Charlemagne the God talk about it and to look at the numbers and Steve Kornacki going on about how Trump outperformed with non-white voters. I mean, it helped him in a lot of different ways here. People saw him as being abused by the very system that has so in so many ways gone after them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. But there is a caveat to that point, and I think it's an important one. I've had some people throw stuff at me for making this point, but it's just a fact. You don't want to turn the Democrats into a monolith. Mm-hmm. I do think that national Democrats and the party, the national leadership of the party, realizes that lawfare was a catastrophe for Democrats. It's probably why Trump won the election. And I think it had exactly the effect on most voters that you just described. The thing is, Democrats aren't the same everywhere. And in Manhattan, unlike the rest of the country, Kamala Harris beat Trump by 63 points. Manhattan is a hotbed of progressive Democrats. And what's unpopular throughout the country is not necessarily something that turns off at least a political class in Manhattan. So even though this was bad for Democrats nationally, it's probably good for Bragg. There was some polling that came out in the New York Post about, you know, I don't know, a month, 2 months ago, that said that he's favored to win re-election when he's up next year. He's favored certainly to get the nomination and probably to win. And I hate to say it because I'm a, you know, I'm born and bred New Yorker, but they're probably right about that. I hope it's wrong, but they're probably right.
I agree with you. I mean, this is all politics is local, right? And this is as local as it gets, Andy McCarthy. And that's the point that you're making. Yep. Andy McCarthy's with me of National Review. It's great to have him on the show. Let's turn to Jack Smith here, because Merrick Garland's made an announcement regarding Jack Smith's final report and how he wants to release this. Trump obviously wants to try to stop that as well. Where does all that stand?
Well, you know, first of all, I think the idea that it's necessary for Smith to do a final report here is just ridiculous. This is not a case where, like the Mueller report, where nobody was charged with a crime, so the final report of the special counsel is the only record that we really have of the investigation. I mean, if you take both of these cases, were indicted multiple times. There was 2 years of litigation. Smith again and again and again described his charges and his theories of the case and why he brought it like a million times. So, and remember, Rich, was it about, it was in October. So it was about three and a half weeks before the election. He convinced Judge Chuck in Washington to let him file publicly this full compendium of what he intended to prove in the case, and a 2000 page appendix with what all the witnesses were going to say, because they wanted to get that stuff out to help Democratic messaging in the run-up to the election. So the idea that we need another report from this guy for him to explain his charging decisions is just ridiculous. And it makes me hysterical to read Merrick Garland and the Justice Department in a brief that they filed in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday, when they say that the special counsel regulations require the special counsel to write a report at the end of the investigation. I mean, first of all, Garland follows the regulations when he feels like following them and then ignores them the rest of the time.
Right.
Like the same regulations say that you're supposed to bring a special counsel in from outside the government. Well, that didn't stop him in the Hunter Biden investigation from having a guy who was under his control, the U.S. attorney from Delaware, run the case, right? Because he wanted to keep tight control on that. So they don't follow the regulations when they don't feel like it. And in fact, they point out that the last regulation, what is it, Section 600-10, it says that they don't have to follow the regulations. It basically says that these regulations create no rights for anybody that are enforceable in any court. So they can follow them or not follow them as they wish to. They're putting out these reports because they want to, not because they have to. And they're rushing them out the door before January 20th because they know once Trump is in power and he's running the executive branch, all this stuff is going to get shut down. So they're doing what they're doing for the same reason Judge Merchan and Alvin Bragg want Trump to be sentenced, right? They're just trying to sully him before he gets into office. But, you know, consistent with what you said earlier, I do think politically this is all counterproductive in the end.
Oh, it absolutely is. And it just makes Jack Smith look so vengeful and spiteful, and Merrick Garland as well. And it just proves the point about these people. I mean, Donald Trump is a defendant accused by his government. And for that government to come out with a final report trying to say the guy's guilty before he's gone before a jury of his peers is outrageous. And I mean, you know, civil libertarians should be out there screaming and saying that, you know, if the case doesn't move on, if the case doesn't go anywhere, for the government to produce an official document arguing that the person's guilty, that's up to a jury to do that. We've already heard the charges. He's laid out the charges. So this is completely unnecessary.
Yeah, that's why the regulations that Merrick Garland cares so very much about say that the report is supposed to be confidential. But of course, he just wants Smith to finish the report so he can put it out publicly, right? The thing is, I don't think, you know, this was all front and center in front of our attention. The Democrats used it as much as they could. They exploited it to a fairly well in hope of that it would get them someplace in the election. And I think in the end, it hurt them a lot more than it helped them. You know, I keep coming back to the Bragg case because that's the only one that was tried. But that riveted all our attention throughout April and May. The whole country watched that because Trump was in court every single day. And we see the effect it had. I don't think if you told someone, you know, I think by the spring of 2024, there are a lot of people who believed that Trump could win the election. I wasn't one of them at that point. But a lot of people believed it. But I think most people who thought he would win the election were looking at the electoral map and figuring out, here's the way he'll eke out a win in the electoral college. I don't think anybody thought that Trump was going to win a popular majority, or certainly, you know, most people I was listening to back then thought that if he was going to win, it would have to be the electoral college. That's why all the Democrats were screaming that we need to get rid of the electoral college, right? So I think all of this ended up counterproductive, and it's mainly the reason why he won. It's not so much that Trump suddenly became tremendously popular with people in the middle in America. I think a lot of people, including people who don't have much fondness for Trump, looked at the way the Democrats were weaponizing the law enforcement apparatus of the country, and it's frightening because if they can do it to Trump, they can do it to anyone.
Well said. Andy, I appreciate your time. There's a lot of great pieces you wrote at National Review. I'm just going to mention to people, definitely read, I mean, all of them, but I love the fact that you point out, Mr. Attorney General, how many Capitol riot murder charges did you bring? That was a great piece there. And your other piece about if you think the weaponization by this Department of Justice is over, think again. So definitely go to nationalreview.com. Check out Andy's work. Follow him on X at Andrew C. McCarthy. I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Rich.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Zeoli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
That's right. And that is my happy place, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. And I'm happy right now. And it's not just because of the morphine, but I am doing the show live from a hospital room right now. I'm getting surgery tomorrow on my infected foot. So if you're just joining us, I'll give you a quick recap. First of all, where you've been. Had my foot surgery on December 6th by a doctor who was not part of Cooper, which was my mistake. And it got infected, and then it got infected again, and then it got infected a third time. And then I was having bad chills the other night and feeling confused and light. I mean, I'm always confused, but lightheaded. Nauseous, and my toe was just in enormous pain. Went to the emergency room, and they said, you need to be here on IV antibiotics. And tomorrow, I'm getting surgery on my toe, and they're going to remove the implant that's in there that they had put in. Not them, not the doctors who are doing it tomorrow. The Fugazi doctor did. And they're going to clean it out and hopefully get to the bottom of this infection once and for all. But it's scheduled for tomorrow, and I was, you know, going to take off today, and I'm lying in my hospital room this morning, and I said, I want to work. I want to do the show. I want to come on the air. So my friend at this undisclosed hospital came and helped me with the equipment that would be necessary to do a radio show. And here we are. But I'm grateful that you're joining us for this today. And I'm getting great care by the doctors and nurses, and I'll talk about that at some point in the future. But that's where I am, doing a show, historic show from a hospital room. And I'm happy because the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey is my happy place. And at some point I'll be out of here and we'll be back there doing live shows. And if you are looking for a little winter getaway, then make your reservation at the Grand Hotel. You always have my name to use, Zioli, for 25% off. It's a great, great opportunity for you to go to the Grand Hotel of Cape May and say hello and see this wonderful place. And hopefully we'll get some dates on the calendar for next year. But don't wait. They have that indoor heated pool. You take the kids and they'll love it. Because, you know, we got President's Day weekend coming up. We got all kinds of weekend getaway at the Grand, indoor saltwater heated pool. Beautiful, beautiful thing. All right, as we continue along the show here today, I appreciate you being here. 855-839-1210 is the number if you want to weigh in. I'm not going to spend much time on the wildfires in California, but I do want to play two important clips for you. Fox News reported Jonathan Hunt on the ground in Los Angeles about the resources that they just don't have out there. And I'll point out to you that former President Donald Trump was absolutely correct when he pointed out to Joe Rogan the danger. Someone's calling my room. I don't know who. The danger that was done in California, Gavin Newsom, and the resources he took away. Plus, how many firefighters in California lost their jobs because they refused to take the COVID jab by Gavin, the hypocrite, the Hair Newsom. And also, of course, California doesn't do the right things in terms of forest management. I mean, the list goes on and on. And they're going to be screaming about climate change, of course, as they always, always do. Cut number one.
The ongoing destruction of an entire neighborhood. As you look behind me here, the house directly in front of us was a two-story house just about an hour ago. As you can see now, reduced to nothing but rubble. And if you look to the left, as Brian pans left, that is the next home down the street, a multi-million dollar home, a huge home. That one now completely ablaze, not a fire truck in sight. Firefighters simply don't have the resources right now to continue fighting every one of these fires, saving every one of these properties. It is a question of saving lives.
Former Los Angeles County Sheriff points out on Fox News that California spent only a fraction of the money allocated for this. Again, this is the failure of Gavin Newsom. Failure of Gavin Newsom, no question about it. Cut number two.
Well, you got to recognize that there was a bond measure in 2014, Proposition 1, that allocated $7.5 billion for the infrastructure to capture water in reservoirs. They had that available so our hydrants would be basically full of water and then times of need. And only a fraction of that money has been spent. It has all been tied up in bureaucratic nightmare. Then you have the workforce itself. You have fire, LA County, LA City Fire, their numbers are depleted. LAPD, LA Sheriffs, their numbers are depleted. Where is the National Guard here? I mean, there's a lot of things, a lot of manpower that is missing. And it all goes from 2024, yes, the whole defunding movement, this impact.
Can we talk about that? Because we were reading in the Post this morning that the LA Fire Department had seen budget cuts by about $17 million. How much of this is or is not preventable based on some of those budget cuts?
Oh, this is very, very preventable. Because you called the fire department, both city and county fire, part of the whole first responder infrastructure. That has been one of the targets of politicians from 2020 forward, to take money away from and deplete those resources, supposedly under this grand scheme of we're going to reinvest it in the community. Well, the community right now needs exactly what they don't have, which is the staffing levels for fire and for first responders, for law enforcement, to be able to safely evacuate and to be able to fight these fires.
Donald Trump is supposed to arrive on Capitol Hill soon. If he speaks, we'll try to jump in live for you today and grab some of it. But I think moving his agenda forward is obviously what everybody's talking about on Capitol Hill. It's what they want to see happen, no doubt about it. And it should happen because Donald Trump needs to start on day one. And he's got a mandate. He announced yesterday a $20 billion investment for new data centers throughout the United States of America. $20 billion with a B. It's going to be great. Cut number 10.
Business leaders in the Middle East, indeed the world. He's a founder and chairman of Demac Properties, Hussein Sejwani, very respected gentleman. And I'm thrilled to announce today that DMACC will be investing at least $20 billion over a very short period of time into the United States, and they may go double or even somewhat more than double that amount of money. This is a great thing, and I believe he will say that he's doing it because of the fact that he was very inspired by the election. They wouldn't do it without that election, I can tell you. A lot of people wouldn't. You saw last week where we have somebody who's going to go from $100 to $200 billion, and we have many other people, and we'll be bringing some of them out. Some of them like to do it somewhat more quietly, and some don't, and they feel so strongly about the country that they want to let people know about it. But it's an honor to have such a great investor investing in our country. The investment will support massive new data centers across the Midwest, the Sun Belt area, and also to keep America on the cutting edge of technology and artificial intelligence. He's very big into the data centers, and that's going to be a very hot item in the coming years, as you know, with AI. In particular, the first phase of the project will be in Texas, Arizona, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, and Indiana, those places.
Now, Steve Kornacki in his khaki pants on MSNBC pointing out something regarding this election. And again, this infuriates Democrats as Trump arrives on Capitol Hill right now, infuriates Democrats to think how Trump was able to reach across to various demographic groups because Democrats have no coalition left except for white lefty elitists in faculty lounges and on the coasts. Cut number 12.
Put this all together, and basically one third of the non-white vote was won by Donald Trump. And as a share of the overall of Trump's overall coalition nationally, there's never been a Republican presidential candidate whose coalition percentage-wise has been as the non-white concentration of that coalition has never been as high in a presidential race as what we're seeing right here in 2024 with Donald Trump. So that's a very significant shift, obviously, for this year. But again, this is a trend, especially among Hispanics and Asian Americans, that we already started to see in 2020. You know, one of the takeaways in 2020 was that Trump was doing better among Hispanic voters. So the implications for this for the future, I think this is what Democrats, you know, a lot of people look at this election and they say, well, you know, Trump won, but look, it was, you know, Harris was pretty close in three electoral, in those three Midwest states. If she'd won them, she wins the election. The popular vote's going to be, you know, a little bit under a point and a half difference between them. Not that bad of an election, big picture, for Democrats, even though they didn't win. You hear that, but you also talk to Democrats who think this is worse for them because of the fear that this is going to get worse for them going forward.
There you go. Not good. Not good. Matt, do you have that clip of Biden at the press conference today? And did you get a chance to watch it?
I haven't watched it yet. It's not very long if you want to hear it, though.
All right. So this was the wildfire press conference. Thanks to my buddy Lee Pervorsky for sending this over to me. And this was basically the entire press conference by the president of the United States and the governor of Gavin Newsom, the failure. Take a listen.
We got notification yesterday that our home burned to the ground. Today, the parents are maybe still standing. I'm not sure. But the good news is I'm a great-grandfather as of today. I have a granddaughter. And not a baby girl, a baby boy. So I remember this day for about a long time. Thank you, Brett. Very
okay. And that's that. He's a great grandfather as of today, and that's the end of it. So, you know, millions of people in the zone here of these out of control wildfires, and there you go. He's a great grandfather. So, all right. Lots to get to as we continue. Our buddy Matt Rooney is going to join us. Let's talk about Jersey politics a little bit and why all eyes are on 2025 New Jersey voter registration and how did the Jersey Democrats who want to run for governor, how did they vote on the Laken-Riley Act in the House of Representatives yesterday? I should also mention to you some breaking news. As President Trump, Donald Trump arrives on Capitol Hill, the police arrested a man who was attempting to carry a machete and three knives into the United States Capitol building. But he was arrested, and Trump has a massive, massive security presence around him, which is good. Before I go to break, let me play one more clip for you. This is regarding the idea of taking over Canada. So Donald Trump making the point that, listen, you know, Canada has good things for us. Now, I do think he's trolling Canada on this. I really, really do. I think he's trolling, but it's fun. It's fun for me to watch and to listen to all this. I really, really do. But he's prepared to use economic pressure to force Canada to become part of the United States if necessary. This is just him mocking little Justin Trudeau, the bastard. Okay, I won't. Bastard love child of Fidel Castro. Cut number seven.
The leader of the Conservative Party in Canada said, under no circumstances, sure, will ever be the 51st
state. Maybe he won't win, but maybe he will.
You were considering military force to acquire Panama and Greenland. Are you also considering military force to annex and acquire Canada?
No. Economic force, because Canada and the United States, that would really be something. You get rid of that artificially drawn line, and you take a look at what that looks like, and it would also be much better for national security. Don't forget, we basically protect Canada. But here's the problem with Canada. So many friends up there. I love the Canadian people. They're great. But we're spending hundreds of billions a year to protect it. We're spending hundreds of billions a year to take care of Canada. We lose in trade deficits. We're losing mass. We don't need their cars. You know, they make 20% of our cars. We don't need that. I'd rather make them in Detroit. We don't need the cars. We don't need their lumber. We have massive fields of lumber. We don't need their lumber. We have to unrestrict them because stupid people put, you know, restrictions on. But I can do that with an executive order. We don't need anything they have. We don't need their dairy products. We have more than they have. We don't need anything. So why are we losing $200 billion a year and more to protect Canada? And I said that to, as I called him, Governor Trudeau. I said, listen, what would happen if we didn't subsidize you, if we didn't, because we give them a lot of money. We help them. As an example, we're buying icebreakers. And Canada wants to join us in the buying of icebreakers. I said, you know, we don't really want to have a partner in the buying of icebreakers. We don't need a partner. But
I want to mention as well, you know, Justine Bateman, who I think has been phenomenal on social media, especially after Trump won. I cannot tell you the fury many Los Angeles residents feel looking at these three people together. She's talking about Gavin Newsom, Joe Biden, and the mayor of the city of Los Angeles, and also Alex Padilla as well. But the mayor of Los Angeles finally arriving in L.A., she was on a trip to Africa and went back to Los Angeles, Mayor Karen Bass. So people are just infuriated. But that's why Trump won. I mean, the difference between the leadership. But even Maggie Haberman of The New York Times says Trump is basically trolling here with his comments on Canada. I mean, it's basically just a giant troll. Yes, he has an expansionist mindset, but it is pretty much a troll. Cut number nine.
Yeah, I think everything Caitlin said is correct, you know, especially on Greenland. These things are not all the same. Panama is a relatively new focus of his, as Caitlin said. Greenland, not only has he been talking about it for some time, but a lot of people have been talking about it for some time. This idea of acquiring Greenland for strategic purposes has happened, you know, for decades. And a close friend of Trump's suggested it to him in his first term, Ron Lauder. It's never totally gone away. But Trump is clearly in an expansionist mindset. He also keeps talking about Canada as a 51st state. That is clearly much more of a troll and sort of a dominance play. But in terms of Trump talking about military action, or at least not ruling it out, as Caitlin said, that caught a lot of people by surprise. It's not clear if that's actually something he's thinking about or something he said, because he was quite visibly in a pretty bad mood during this press conference, I think primarily because of the legal challenges that he's facing this week in the New York criminal case, and with the possibility of the Jack Smith report and the documents federal case getting released.
Maggie, he wasn't in a bad mood. He was in a leadership mood, but it's okay. It's all right. He is trolling. I agree with you on that. And if you think he's going to invade Canada, good. You know why? It only took him about 15 minutes. I saw the movie with John Candy, Canadian Bacon. It won't be hard. All right, listen, Matt Rooney's going to join us next. Let's talk about flipping Jersey red in 2025. That is the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria. If you need a beautiful smile for 2025, and who doesn't, reach out to Dr. Mike today. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, VeneriaDental.com. Coming right back.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Yeah, I can't hear the music, so I'm just going to start talking. All right, welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. It's not your fault, Justin. I don't know what the issue is, but it's all right. Welcome back. What's that?
Everything else has been working fine. I don't know. Like I said, there's always got to be something. It can't go perfect.
Of course. Something always has to be work. And by the way, where does the poll stand on Matt DeSantis' fugly girlfriend?
We ended at 43% on 7 or 8, and 6 and below ended up at 54%.
Yeah, so the majority thinks that she's not attractive. Matt DeSantis is a fake girlfriend, so he thinks anything at this point is attractive. Basically, is what
the girl was good looking.
Clearly not. The majority has spoken. The Zeoli army has good taste. You don't. Has Rooney weighed in on this? As Matt Rooney, the founder of Save Jersey, the host of the Matt Rooney Show, right here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, have you weighed in on this Hooters girl yet?
I have, and I mean, who am I to talk? I'm lucky I found anyone to marry me, Rich.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're like a 3 at best.
Yeah, my wife is serving out a sentence, community service, and it's unfortunately for life, or until she can find a better attorney than me, which also may not be hard, so there's that. I'm just trying
what
to
happened? I was all excited to listen to you today, hosting on Talk Radio 1210 from 3 to 7 p.m. What happened?
Well, it was hugely depressing. Stocker reached out in a moment of need for the station, which we all know I'm dedicated to 1210. That goes without saying. So I was ready to go. I was doing show prep, all set. And then Stocker decided, I guess, that a man in a hospital gown not wearing pants on an IV would do a better job than me. So my self-esteem's in the toilet. I mean, I'm happy you're well enough to be able to do the show, but DeSantis even did show prep. He took time away from, I guess, his ugly girlfriend.
Fake girlfriend. Do that. Fake. She's very beautiful. She's just not real.
Well, she could be as beautiful or ugly as she wants, I guess, since she's a fantasy. So,
right.
make out of her what you want her to be, I guess.
I think as you put it on Twitter, because you were supposed to host today on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, but however, since right. Zeoli is insane, you'll just be coming on as a guest anyway, which is, by the way, a huge consolation prize, if you ask me.
It is a huge consolation prize. You know how many people beg DeSantis to get on this mm-hmm. program for it's any true. Purpose at any time? So it's big. I mean, I'd rather do this than Disney World. There's no doubt about it.
Talk to me about the article at SaveJersey.com. It's funny when my friends send me your articles, but you point out that there are a couple members of the delegation in the House of Representatives from New Jersey who want to become governor of New Jersey. They voted a certain way on the Laken Riley Act yesterday. Let's talk about that.
This one is not controversial, right? There's plenty of things that Americans disagree on right now. This isn't it. I think they had about 48 Democrats vote for this bill. John Fetterman is for it, as he continues mm-hmm. his probably self-serving rightward turn. A little bit of an editorialization there, topic for another time, maybe. Two Democrats, as you say, Rich, running for governor of New Jersey. Mikey Sherrill, she represents the 11th congressional district up around Morris County. And Josh Gottheimer, he's a North Jerseyan too, the 5th, which takes in, if you think of New Jersey as kind of having a cap on, it's the entire roof of the state. So, I mean, how craven can one possibly be? I don't think this bill is controversial. How can you not want to protect mm-hmm. Americans, especially the most vulnerable Americans, from criminal illegal aliens? But you know what? If you do stand with illegal aliens over Americans, at least have the courage to say it. Plenty of Democrats did. I think they're crazy. I think they're too dangerous to lead, but at least they're honest, crazy people. Mikey Sherrill, Josh Gottheimer didn't even vote, and they haven't told anyone, from the best I can tell, where they were. Naturally, the legacy media is not going to press them on it. Save Jersey is going to bang that drum. Kudos to Jack Cittarelli, one of the Republican candidates for governor, who called them out. And it's going to be a real black mark for either of them if they win the nomination. I don't think, Rich, I know you know this, your audience knows this, the Zeoli Army, this issue has turned. The American people don't feel the same way about illegal immigration they did a few years ago because they've seen the catastrophic results of having an open border. That's why John Fetterman's changing his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Look, I mean, this was kind of a no-brainer vote, right? Right, Matt? I mean, this is the kind of vote you take and you say, we're going to get rid of criminals. It's not that complicated. And hiding from it looks worse. Yeah.
No, that's right. This, you know, the left wants to conjure these images of Elian Gonzalez on repeat, mm-hmm. right? That's not what this is. These are people who we know have committed crimes, heinous crimes, that are going to be shipped out of the country. If you can't stand with the American people on something like the Laken Riley bill, I mean, who are you standing with? You're almost become kind of self-parody at that point, which is where the Democrat Party's at. That's why they got spanked in the last election. Fetterman, God love him, is smart enough to realize that, along with some members of the House. It's one of the reasons why I'm optimistic that we might actually retake our home state this year, Rich, because there's no sign that I can find that the Democrat Party in New Jersey gets it. Also, Nellie Poo, who only held on to her new seat by a point this past year, she voted against the Laken Riley Act. So I'll give her an extra point for courage to admit to everyone that she doesn't care about her fellow Americans. Mm-hmm. But that's a vote she's going to have to defend in 26.
Now, let's talk about what you just mentioned about flipping New Jersey red. So a couple things. Number one, Chitterelli, who is, I would say, you know, some would argue the front runner in this, has raised a ton of cash. He's already qualified for matching funds. Number two is Republican registrations far outpacing Democrat registrations at this point.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. So I love this statistic. So from 2021, right after Joe Biden assumed office, to January 2025. That's 4 years for anybody to learn math from the NJEA. Democrats in New Jersey have gained a net of nine registered voters. Not 900,000, not 9,000, not 900. Nine. Republicans up like a quarter of a million and growing. It's huge. Mm. And it's because, again, similar theme here with what we're seeing with the Laken Riley Act roll call. New Jerseyans have lived with these policies. Now they've lived with these policies. They've lived with Governor Murphy. 4 years ago, Governor Murphy only held on when he was running for re-election against Jack Chitterelli by 3 points. You got to think that shift has only continued, and it's no longer just idle speculation. We saw what happened in the Keystone State last year. Voter registration is a leading indicator for how a state is going to tilt. And if voter registration in New Jersey is any indicator, there's no reason to think Republicans can't win this year. And if they don't, Rich, candidly, I know you're going to be with me on this, shame on them. Because issues like this Laken Riley vote, it's basically serving up all of the fodder they need to take down the Democrat establishment.
No doubt about it. Matt Rooney's with me, the founder of SaveJersey.com, the go-to site, host of the Matt Rooney Show right here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. You can listen to it every Sunday night. And also what he fills in for me when I'm not doing the show from my hospital bed. You also point out something, which is Trump again doubling down, reiterating his support for a total ban on offshore wind. This is another area, I think, where Democrats are so stupid to go down this road. And that's really smart of Trump. The other thing is education, too. You know, Virginia was key to Glenn Youngkin's victory. Education in New Jersey and this latest thing now with the teacher standards, and you know, we don't have to get in the weeds on it, but just top line headline, you know, they're getting rid of standards for teachers. I mean, it's stupid, but New Jerseyans are fed up with the indoctrination, and Phil Murphy, I think, is going to help deliver New Jersey to the Republicans, because all he gives a damn about at this point is running for president. So all he cares about is going to his extreme left as he looks to Iowa and South Carolina.
Yeah, it used to be in politics, you would kind of aim for the center. That's what candidates wanted to do in the general election. That's not the Democrat Party of 2025. They are constantly playing to their extreme fringe. That's what Mikey Sherrill and Josh Gottheimer just did by voting to keep criminal illegal aliens that kill and rape Americans in our country. And time again, you're right, that's what Phil Murphy's done. No one wants these windmills. The president nailed it. They make our lives more expensive. They kill Flipper's friends. They kill Shamu's friends in the ocean. They are going to destroy
the coastline. You're not talking about Chris Christie here, right? I want to be clear.
Yes, I want to be clear about
Chris Christie, right?
Okay. I'm not talking about Fatty McThunderbiscuits, who I think is a fan of offshore wind.
He started it. Yep.
Well, he doesn't like other whales because they're competition in the food chain.
That's just wrong. Just wrong. Come on, Matt Rudy. Come on.
I'm a terrible person. Oh, my God. I know. After that joke, I kind of feel like Rich's foot. I shouldn't have said that.
I wanted to hear you say Fatty McThunderbiscuits because it's been a while since I've heard that. So I teed you up for that, basically.
I mean, there's no mystery to it because 1210 listeners keep asking me. I mean, he's a fatty. He probably likes biscuits. And when he moves, it makes a thunderous noise. I mean, you meet him. He's the only person I've ever met that is literally as tall as he is wide. So it's just me being literal. That's all.
That's what we're talking about. I don't remember. Yeah, exactly.
Who cares?
And then the other question is Scott Pressler, who is, you know, helped flip Pennsylvania. And I mean, the guy's done God's work. He set his sights on Jersey. He declared it on this show. I know he's been on your show. He's going to work really hard. He's already getting down to it. He's meeting with Republican county chairs, I believe, tomorrow night. How much of Scott Pressler's effect is going to help New Jersey, you think?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, first of all, the guy seems to know what he's doing, right? Mm-hmm. He knows how to sign up voters, register them, encourage them to return their ballots, which that's the key, right? It's one thing to register to vote. You have to actually then bank your vote for it to make a difference. But first and foremost, I think the beauty of Scott Pressler, besides those flowing locks that he loves to display, he's always whipping his hair around, maybe like those Maybe It's Maybelline commercials, right. Is the guy is the ultimate mascot for banking your vote. For years, Republicans were reluctant to do the smart thing, which is play the game. Yeah, I get it. We all kind of wax philosophically about how wonderful it was when we used to have to go to the polling place on election day. It was a communal civic activity. But Democrats, they tried to rig the game by making it so that they could get their low propensity voters banked before election day and get an artificial edge over Republicans. We have finally now cut into that advantage, and he's been the ultimate mascot for Republicans making that internal revolution. It also signals to donors, the press, everyone who we need to pay attention to 2025 that, hey, you know what? Everyone is taking the Garden State very seriously. So I love that he's going to be here. I guess he's setting up on the Wildwood Boardwalk. He's not going to get too many new registrants down there right now because there's like 10 inches of snow. But come the spring, I think that it's going to be a really big deal.
Matt Rudy, tune into his show this coming Sunday evening, 7:30 to 10, right here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. And check out the site, savejersey.com. All right, my friend, thanks for being on standby for me today. And we will have you filling in for me again. You always do a great job, and we appreciate it, brother. So thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity. You get well, all right?
All right, pal. Thanks.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, big fourth and final hour coming up straight ahead for you live from my hospital room as I await surgery tomorrow. And let's talk about Greenland. We got a lot to talk about as Trump is on Capitol Hill. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.